So I'll go ahead and open it up. So as if it were just a regular recording. So hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 110 of the Little Things for Bonsai People podcast show. It is 2025, the year of the snake. Thank you, Marvin, for remembering.
You're welcome.
So we are sitting at Save Bonsai 2025, and basically this is a whole new environment for us for this show. This is the first live recording, so welcome to the live audience to the show, and give a clap, or people know y'all are here. Cool. There's people there. They're captive. They're not a captivated audience. They're captive with us. So I am joined by my show hosts, starting off with Carmen Lesko-Bienski. How's it going, Carmen?
Pretty good. Thanks, Evan.
Yeah, as always. How's the weather?
It's kind of hot.
It's kind of hot. Wait, you're not in Michigan today, so.
No, I'm in.
Yeah. When I asked Carmen how the weather's going, it's actually chilly.
Cold.
So she's joining us on this 80 degree humid day. In springtime, we're doing pretty good. And of course, we got the wonderful, the amazing South Florian, Mike Lane. How's it going, Mike?
Good. How are you guys?
How's everybody doing?
Enjoying the weekend. This has been really great.
Excellent. Yep. So this time on our podcast show, not only are we going to be live, we're going to be talking about a few topics today. We're going to talk about Save Bonsai, of course, and how to put together a show and how we got here. And then Mike had brought up a really good point about talking about junipers. And how we were pretty juniper heavy this time around on our demonstrations for Save Bonsai, and how that's kind of out of the ordinary for Southeast Range. A lot of people in this, I don't want to be too crude, but there's a low confidence in junipers usually, and you know, overwatering or deadwood features or whatever there might be. Because you had said something about how junipers end up becoming that meteor project. I like that phrase you used. What was it?
Yeah, I just said we were discussing kind of the evolution as an artist and whatnot. And I guess I was saying at this point, I really like junipers because they're a meteor project. When you sit down to do a juniper, it's usually there's a code you're following, like a cause and effect. So you're kind of starting at one end of the juniper and slowly working your way through the steps. And it just has a lot of different techniques that you're going to employ to make a tree, like shotomiki techniques to create live veins and deadwood, thinning the foliage, cleaning the trunk, the placement of the foliage and the different ways you can make those arrays, guy wires and big bends on branches. There's just a lot to consider from even an engineering standpoint when you approach a old juniper project. So they're a lot of fun, and especially when you're kind of have been doing this for a long time and you've done a lot of clip and grow, you've done a lot of cutting things back, you've done a lot of broadleaf design. It's really fun to break into something new and kind of evolve into something that really we should all have under our belts, in my opinion, because black pine is considered the patriarch of bonsai. It's very important that we understand that and the physiology of the pine. And junipers are kind of the traditional, it's the bonsai of the zeitgeist. You know, it's the bonsai we all think of before we even knew what any of the rules were. You know, it's the one from the Karate Kid. It's just the one that we are all kind of always thinking about. So I think, though, with black pines, why it's so important is that there is no faking it. There's no, you have to learn the proper way to balance vigor and maintain vigor on different parts of the tree. And we sometimes don't have to do that on tropicals and broadleaf design, or we can at least get away with not doing that for a long period of time. And pines will kind of force you out of that comfort zone. So I think it's important for every grower at some point in their growing to experiment with pines.
Thank you for that really broad intro to our topic.
Nice.
Sorry. No, it's okay. If y'all have listened to Mike on our show before, we know that he likes to get really deep on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just not just that, but that's a good explanation to junipers, but like how everyone eventually gravitates to working with them as opposed to being like, I'm going to do only deciduous, I'm only going to do tropical. So yeah, that's a good break into it. But any comments, Carmen, before we get too far past that?
I agree.
Okay, let's go. So before we get too much further into this, we do need to mention that our show is sponsored by our amazing patrons. You can go over to patreon.com/littlethingsforbonsaipeople and become a bonsai best bud. We don't have any featured best buds on this one because we're live and I don't have my script in front of me.
I think they're like all here.
I think a lot.
Best buds are here.
There's a lot of featured best buds today.
I'm putting a lot of faces with a lot of names. It's super fun.
Yep. Like we said in the past, if you're at a show, at a Boneside show, and you know we're here, please come say hey. It really lightens up our day and it lets us know that people are listening. Of course, we have our main show sponsor, Joshua Roth Tools. We have John with us here today. He's actually helping us record. Thank you, John. He's in the back there. John is actually set up today. We have him as one of our featured vendors at Save Boneside. He's sponsoring one of our awards today. Awesome. Of course, we have the Boneside Bar sponsoring our show as well. And then I thought we had one more other sponsor. I can't not remembering right now.
Underhill
Boneside. There, thank you. Underhill Boneside sponsors our show. You're welcome. I'm here. Miss Mary is sitting in the back, Doug's wife with Underwood Hill as well. There's a best bud. Chase Tweed. Hey, you're our featured best bud right now.
Yeah,
there you go. So, but yeah, thank you guys for sponsoring a show. And of course, today at the show, we have our, went to a Boneside workshop and all I got was this stumped shirt. I'd like to thank the patrons for helping us come up with that design. It's been a very popular shirt and catch up here today. And of course, on our website, Parman's rocking her own. So awesome. Yeah, I think that's it. Oh, yeah, we can't go much further without mentioning our editor, Matt O'Donnell. He is a set bassist living in Nashville, Tennessee. And if you want to start your own podcast show, if you want to do your own audio engineering project with him, you can go over to mattodonnell.com and fill out a contact form. He's an all-around awesome guy. Say it in the script. It's in there every single time. Something like that along that variance. So, yeah, Carmen, how do you feel about the topic of junipers being kind of like the... just kind of like the end result of bonsai people and their practices?
I feel like junipers are often the first thing that bonsai people go to, and then they give up, and then they come back around to junipers further in their career. Because a lot of times people are presented with junipers as like the easiest bonsai to work with. And on one hand, they are, but they're also one of the hardest trees to design. And I think a lot of folks come into junipers imagining the tree that they have is like ready to go in a pot, ready to go in a show. When in reality, a lot of the junipers that come to people at first really need 5 or 10 or 15 years of like constant work just to create interest before you actually come out with a bonsai. And a lot of folks don't actually teach junipers like to that level of complication. And so like a single juniper workshop isn't going to teach you enough to get to like, you know, the national show level of junipers. And so it you know, you kind of have to spend a lot of time with them and, you know, maybe start growing them. They're pretty easy to keep alive. But again, if you're going to do a lot of design work with them, you really need a lot. It's a lot of advanced technique over and over and over again to really get something pretty amazing. So, yeah, they're easiest to keep alive, hardest to style.
I would agree with that. Hardest to do all the meticulous work over and over again, because most people who get into bonsai, they imagine just watering, keeping the tree looking healthy, and then they kind of just want to stop there. Whereas a juniper, you need to constantly check wire. You need that fertilizer is a lot more important on junipers than it would be on other species where we could simply cut back and chase vigor, such as like tropicals, deciduous trees, and stuff like that. It's easy to reset those. But with junipers, it takes a little bit more cantilevering of foliage, moving things around, changing angles. Nabari is really, really hard to work with. So yeah, that's and where I'm getting to is like, you know, the juniper as a whole, like that's just like we all start out as bonsai people and we say we're going to have our specialty. Like Mike does tropicals a good bit. You are an azalea person mostly, could be, you know, through the university. Yeah, that's not by default. Yeah. And I'm the bold cypress person out of the group, apparently. I don't know. But really, whenever it comes down to it, like you see these older bonsai artists, they get into it and these guys work like on almost exclusively junipers at some points. And you're like, why did they get there? I thought they lived in a range where that was their thing and they were going to build that as their reputation and as their repertoire of all their work. And it ends up being all exclusively junipers, it feels like. So, I mean, like from the points that we're making here, and it sounds like we're all in agreement. So there's not like a pushback on that. Now, would I prefer to work on other species? Like, yeah, but like, I feel like a juniper could best represent your technical skill, you know, like, and your willingness to put up with the material. and be able to rework it. Just from reference really quick in our crowd, how many people have junipers in their collection? Just about everybody? Julian, you don't have any junipers, do you? Not a single one, right?
How many?
I thought you all card. Did you have a question, Chris?
No, you said who I'm by rate.
Oh, I thought you raised your hand before that. Say it.
How many people out there grow their junipers in 100% non-organic?
That's tricky.
If I had one, I would.
Yeah, so just to add that, is it a good time to get into this kind of stuff? Yeah.
Yeah.
So one thing that was a big game changer for me as a beginner getting into junipers was I had listened to a talk by Boone, who's a very famous bonsai artist in the U.S. He had said something about juniper pine bark toxicity. And I thought that wasn't true. I didn't believe in it at the time. And I'm still dubious of what that may mean. But fast forward, that hung in the back of my mind for a long period of time. And I continued to have issues with junipers. And then I read in several books about pine bark toxicity and other plants. Essentially, with pine bark or a composted fir or anything like that, you have 2 years before the soil starts working against you. And so then it starts to decay and rot. And so if you're trying to do a long-term project like a conifer and you have organic in your pot, you're either going to repot too frequently or you're going to rot out the tree with the organics that's left in it. So my point being is everyone seems to be afraid of Akadama. But Akadama is something to not be afraid of, and you probably won't have a high level of success in junipers until you go 100% inorganic. And so that's something to consider. And a lot of people will say, well, I need some water retention in my soil. Well, that is why the Akadama is a good amendment, because it'll break down as well. It'll turn into a sludge. It'll turn into a clay, but it won't rot. And so that's going to be one of the biggest issues that we'll have with junipers in my experience. And that's the only time when I stopped killing junipers was when I finally bit the bullet and started listening to the professionals and made the switch. So.
Yeah, I just wanted to pop in and say that if you're going to use an organic as far as growing any of the conifers, usually you use that in your developmental phases when they're in a nursery can. And if you're going to use an organic, using composted steer manure is pretty good because that'll give you the nutrients, but it won't have that problem, the same kind of problem as the fine bark. And it can get real, real fine in there. So that's a good alternative to fine bark if you're going to do that. And then the difference between an organic component breaking down into a sludge versus Akadama breaking down into a sludge is that as the organics break down, they become anaerobic. They're literally rotting there. Something like the Akadama, it's a clay particle. And so as it breaks down, it becomes finer and finer particles, but it's never rotting. It becomes like a sand particle. And so it holds more water. It becomes kind of sludgy, but there's still more air in that stuff, in that sludge, than something that's actively rotting. So that's one of the reasons why going to Akadama as opposed to some of these other organic particles are a better fruit tree overall.
How many people are using Akadama? One, two. Chase, you're not using Akadama. You're joking. So that was 5% of the room? Well, of people that are paying attention right now. You use Akadama in your mix? In your soil mixes?
Akadama.
Okay. So yeah, it's either people who don't know or Akadama is still kind of a mystery or it's kind of scary. So, Is Akadama used in the same way in different areas? Because one of the fears here is overwatering our trees, right? So what percentages should we look at for junipers pertaining to that? What do you think, Mike? I mean, is there too much Akadama in certain ranges? You're in South Florida, so you should have a tougher environment.
Here's the thing we have to remember is that Japan gets more water than any of us on average. So that's just the reality of it. It's a wetter country. So if you want to actually look at the numbers, I would say Florida gets about 50 something inches per year. Japan gets about 80 something per year. So they get more water and they use Akadama on all their trees. So it's not a watering thing. Everywhere I've been to India, I've been to different parts of the US, and there's always a group of people that are scared to use Akadama because of overwatering, and they swear it cannot be used in their area. This is the argument I hear all the time. And then I know there's a small pocket of practitioners that do use it and use it to high effect. And same in India, found the same thing. There was most people said Akadama will not work in India. And then there was a group of Morrow students that used Akadama fine and were able to grow junipers just fine. And so the issue, I don't think, is going to be the overwatering. It will be the percentage of Akadama you put into the soil mix. So obviously, think of Akadama as it's a water-retaining particle, and it's a refinement amendment. So for broadleaf trees, the more Akadama you're going to put in the soil mix, the finer the twigging you're going to get and the slower the growth you're going to get. So that's basically how I've been taught to use Akadama, is more as a slowing agent and as a water retention agent. And so other than that, you know, you've got to kind of think of the tree's needs. Do we use as much Akadama on pines? No. We use a coarser mix for pines, but junipers, we use probably the most common mix is a third, a third, a third. So you use the APL mix. And that's probably the most commonly used soil that I see is Akadama, lava, and ponce.
Almonds?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the issue with if you're having overwatering issues with your Akadama, you are probably overwatering. It's not the Akadama's fault. And, you know, watering is really tricky and it takes a long time to learn, and every tree is going to act a little bit differently. So, Mike's ratio is, you know, about what we would use. If you don't use lava, a lot of times I'll just use, 70% pumice, 30% Akadama. Don't even use the lava. And then if you want it wetter, add a little bit more. If you want it drier, add a little less.
What about the difference between strictly growing in pumice and then going over to Akadama? Because a lot of junipers are grown in purely just in pumice, right when in the start, correct?
Yeah, that's a process of like partial bare roots and introducing your kind of final bonsai mix.
So
in that process of repotting over time, that's not ever something you do all at once.
That might be a good kind of thing to go in there, especially when talking about junipers being the pretty much the tree that we kind of go to. Yeah, I was going to give it back to you in just a second, but because I'm trying to get the mic off me as much as possible. No, but pumice. I hear a lot of people. I mean, I've heard you guys say pumice is kind of what you want to sink your trees into. And I don't think that's something that's discussed a lot, especially beginner circles with junipers, because they get a lot of young junipers and they'll get the organic mixed heavy trees, right? And then who has access to the pumice stone that they would need to make that work, you know? So you'd have to get it from a specialized bonsai, you know, nursery or someone who knows soils like that. And so, you know, could that be one of the ways to help people with junipers that fear junipers, is to get it out of the organics earlier? You know, because it will start breaking down, but what point does it happen? I know we might have covered that a little bit, but I might get a little spotty on that because it's getting like a lot more technical than I thought we were going
to
go with it.
So there's a lot of science to that, and it's proven science. There's companies like Scott Garden and like all the big nurseries that have poured billions of dollars into research into how to grow plants the fastest. And what they found is that composted pine bark or fir bark grows trees the fastest for 2 years. So it grows them the fastest for 2 years and then starts to decay a little bit and starts working against the plant. So this is why every nursery you go to has a columnar black pot with drainage on the sides, and it's paired with black composted pine bark, because that the way it's watered is even thought of in that tall columnar pot. That's why we use a particulate in our shallow pots, is because the way it waters is totally different. So a lot of research has been done in how to use composted pine bark, but generally you're getting 2 years out of it. So people will say, well, how come I don't see plants dying in the nursery all the time? Because what is the destiny of a plant in a nursery? It's going to be up potted or put in the ground. So when it's up potted, fresh pine bark is reintroduced into the soil mix, new roots can grow, and the tree reinvigorates itself. But look at a tree that hasn't been potted, not one that's rooted into the ground, but one that's sat in a pot just in nursery soil for 3 or 4 years, and you will see a tree that's not looking so great. And then go back and look at it 6 or 7 years, and it's probably dying. And so this has been my experience more often than not. So I usually say I get about 2 years of good growth before I need to either add more of the pine bark or I need to do something else, like transfer it over to an inorganic. Yeah, Karen.
The easiest thing to do is just don't use organic.
Right. From the very beginning.
Yeah, sure.
But I'm a grower there, so a lot of my stuff starts out like that.
Yeah, but you don't have to.
I don't have to. But we're talking about cost too. Cost to be
out. Yeah, that's the other thing that plays in is like cost versus speed is like it is the best. It is cheapest for what you get, but you do it has its problems, you know. So in the nursery trade, I definitely see why it's used. But in a perfect world, if I had all the money in the world, I would grow everything in organics.
Here's a really fun trick for you, though. You can start the cuttings in pomace akadama or whatever, then move that whole root clump with the pomace akadama in that root zone into a pot of your nursery soil so that when you're finally going in there to repot and remove some of that
stuff, actually the best idea.
In the core, there's already the soil you need. So you're not ever completely bare rooting it. You just start it in your little 4-inch or 2-inch or whatever, and then a pot in your 1-gallon pine, and then, you know.
That's actually like really, really solid advice.
See, I'm learning here too. So I'm over here growing trees, and apparently Mike and Carmen need to be here more often. You had a question right here?
Yeah. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about, you mentioned just now, this is triad, it starts without even using organics, which you can't do that with a juniper unless it's like Carmen said, it's a cutting. We're going to get a juniper today here in the workshops today. You're going to get a weeded tree that's in nursery soil. So you have to transition. You can bare root juniper.
No.
So you have to, can you explain to the audience the process of going from organic to inorganic with a juniper especially?
You see that would come. She's.
I'm curious to hear Mike's input on this as well. But so how I would do it is, I mean, if you're going to work your tree this weekend, do not do anything with the roots this year. Next year at repotting time, what you can do is pull it, you know, out of your pot, kind of half bare root it, or do 1/3 of a bare root. Work your new bonsai soil into it. And then your next repotting cycle, so not even the next year, maybe in 2 years, do your next 1/3 or your next 1/2 and introduce that soil. So it's going to take a couple repottings to get there. But when you go kind of slowly like that, you're able to move some of, and you're, you know, you're using, when you're bare rooting, use something really gentle, like a bamboo chopstick. So not your root hooks, you know, nothing that's going to really damage your roots too much. It can take half of a day to like partially bare root something. I think that's super fun. A lot of people are like, oh, this sucks. But I think it's really fun to do that. So anyway, take your time with it. It's going to take a number of years to switch over to that other soil. But if you go slowly, gradually over time, you're going to build good roots that will support the next stage of that process.
And I agree with that 100%. Is I usually break down, depending on project size and scale, is if I'm dealing with, let's say, a 10-inch bowl pan or a 10-inch container of nursery soil, then I would usually break that down to maybe a little bigger than, well, probably a bit around a softball, maybe bigger than that, depending on how many roots it has. Maybe I won't go that aggressive, but that's genuinely what I'm going to leave and try and find a suitable container to put it in where I can add some bonsai soil around and under and a little on top. And then basically, just like she said, as I'll start each year subsequently pulling more and more of that organic out slowly but surely until it's completely bare rooted.
So you're not doing a pie wedge of 30% of your...
No, you know, some people do that. And that's how it's been taught a lot, is like half the root ball, you know, half the root ball, a third. I don't know. I've never done it that way. And so I don't know what the benefits are to that. I'm sure there are some. I've always broken it down to an even core and kept it that way, and then basically reduced that further and further and further. So I've interpreted a half of like the entire volume of what I'm reduced.
Cool. Okay about that?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So junipers, good time. You want to talk about the show for a second, guys?
Yeah.
How y'all feel about that?
It's
fine.
No,
it's fine. It took a little while to get set up. So
we need a bounce house.
Yeah.
Was that an option?
No, we're not going to have a bounce house. There's a lot of liability in that. Sorry. So just talk about the show real quick, just so we have a little bit of frame of reference as well. So we started setting up on Thursday. So if there's any volunteers out there, thank you guys for showing up early. I don't see any in here. I know. Stop looking at me, Chase. We had Carmen over here early on. She was helping us set up. Not going to lie, it was pretty stressful. I had one hell of a headache from Thursday through.
I was having a great time.
I know you were. You didn't.
I wasn't in charge.
You were running the show. Yeah. So we, of course, we started with the tent this week. We got it popped up, and this tent is basically just a giant circus tent. For reference, that you can't see it on the show here or on the. We're gonna have a YouTube video later on where you can kind of see what's going on. But yeah, and then of course getting the backdrops in this year, we wanted to go full like professional looking. We wanted to do black cable cloth backdrop. Me, Mike, and Carmen are actually about to get up and become mobile here. So look out. We're going to be working around the show and talking about some of the displays and giving some of our nice to harsh opinions like we do on our podcast show. I know Carmen loves giving her honest opinion on things, and Mike's a lot more technical, so we'll get some really good stuff on that. He's not nearly as nitpicky as I and Carmen tend to be. But yeah, no, this has been one hell of an event. This is our third time doing it, and this is arguably the biggest version of it so far. And so for 3 days, you know, now that we're in the middle, the warm, cushy the warm center of it now, I feel a lot better. But, you know, running a show, I don't recommend doing it alone, just say that. So if anybody's out there that's interested, if you're, you know, you have your local Boneside Club and you'll have conventions that you run and you want to make it bigger on scale, I recommend doing it. I would highly encourage it, but man, this was a tough one to get together. So, but, from what I can tell, see a lot of people smiling today, the jazz music's pumping out there. We got crawfish. I see people peeling crawfish. How many people have eaten crawfish in this area, in this room? We got people. What, back there? You serious? I got my family back there, the Robinsons, my in-laws, they're a professional crawfish peelers back there. So yeah, they're enjoying themselves. That's what matters. Getting family and friends together, people hanging out, listening to good music, eating good food. So yeah, thanks for showing up. I hope everybody tries at least one crawfish, up there, but we got good gumbo. We got, they have another vendor out there serving tacos. Tacos have been incredible. Carlos is on top of his game. Found out he owns a lot of restaurants around here, so there's a lot of catering. So shout out to Tacos, Paco's Tacos and Coretta's and Carlos for putting that on. That's really awesome. And then, of course, we got a lot of our vendors out here. You got to shout out a couple of the vendors that hopefully we can get most of them. You guys can help me remember most of them, right? So we got Fire and Mire, Waldo Street, Pottery, Rob Sheldon with Hands and Tree and Clay Pottery, I'm sorry. You remember a few other ones kind of keep us going here?
I don't remember what their names are.
Great.
Bill Butler's here.
Bill Butler, yeah. Our
Trees.
Timeless Trees. Hurley Johnson's out here. That's awesome. Coming from Houston. And then we have Bill Butler, Bill's Bayou, the anchor specimen best buds out there.
He's showing it. Talk about our best buds.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll catch them up. Yeah. Specimen best buds who know who they are. And then, of course, we got a couple other vendors out there. The Boot Bonsai. Where's is Nate around here?
He just walked through here.
He just walked off a second ago. We're going to look at his tree in the critique. He might be shy of that, so he might be ringing off. But there's too many vendors to name. We might go out and say hey to them real quick. You know, kind of like to wrap this up, this recording up. But how do you guys feel about walking around looking at some trees?
I feel fine. Is everybody going to come with us?
Yeah. Y'all are welcome to join us. I know, don't yawn. I know it's having a great time. If you're not going to heckle me, I'm going to heckle you. I'm sorry. So we're going to get up. We're going to become mobile. Like I said, we're going to change over our rig a little bit. We have somebody that's going to point a camera at us and get us mic'd up a little bit differently. So give us about 5-10 minutes or so for transition, and we can join us starting over there by that beautiful Trident maple. So we're going to get moving.
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
If you love the art of bonsai, mark your calendars for an unforgettable weekend at Waterfront Botanical Gardens in Louisville, Kentucky. From May 30th to June 1st, experience the third annual Bonsai Weekend, featuring stunning displays from bonsai trees, hands-on workshops, live demonstrations, and the chance to shop with top bonsai vendors. This year, the gardens are thrilled to welcome special guest judge Owen Reich, plus club and People's Choice Awards, so you can cast your vote for your favorite tree. Whether you're a seasoned bonsai artist or just curious about this ancient art, there's always something for everyone, including cultural activities, food and drinks, and a vibrant community of bonsai enthusiasts across the country. Last year, over 1,500 attendees from 18 states made their trip to Louisville. So don't miss your chance to be part of this growing tradition. Get your tickets now at bonsaiweekend.com. That's bonsaiweekend.com. We hope to see you at Waterfront Botanical Gardens May 30th through June 1st. Yeah, we're going to start over here. We're not going to do every single tree, but we're going to highlight trees that we find to be interesting. And so you want to start with this trident? Or do you want to go down the line? How do you feel? Let's start with the trident. So first impression, what are we looking at, guys?
It's a nice tree. I like the tree a lot. My feeling is the display could be a little more refined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, typically when you're showing trees, you know, there are just like a certain etiquette you want to follow. And like one of them is you don't want to be in like a mica pot or training container.
Yeah.
Things like that. And so it's mostly like tree wise, technically how it's grown, it's pretty good tree. It's really nice. But my issues are with the display. I think the round container isn't my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And the stand I think is a bit bulky and large.
Yeah. And I mean, this just comes down to, you know, access to certain materials for display.
Sure.
I mean, it's a round pot. It would be best in an oval or maybe a soft rectangle.
Sure.
I mean, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I like, you know, oval. I mean, it can be a number of different shapes provided like the specific pot fits for the tree, because it's hard to say exactly what shape, because you can take a MoCo and squish it down and have it be a lot shallower than you normally would. You can have many different shapes and tapers to MoCos. You can have a lot of different versions of the same shape. So I'm not so much hung up on the fact, I just don't like an equilateral pot. I don't like that it's equal on all sides. So
what do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think, Carmen?
I didn't realize it was a trident maple at first because of how it was potted up in such a big container that's generally used for a conifer. But I think the tree has a lot of potential. It's got good branching. It's got some twigging on it. I think it has farther to go in refinement. I'd love to see the Nabari
pancaked out
a little bit more on this, since that's pretty traditional with the trident maple. It's got good roots. I'd love to just see
do something
as
more.
It goes. Mm. But I think moving it into a glazed oval and then a less bulky stand, something a little bit more delicate, maybe dark in color. But I like that it's low. Yeah. That's really nice because with a big tall tree, a big heavy tree,
having it lower on the table is
a really nice way to still be able to view it at a good height. So I'm happy with that. And one of the things that I really actually like about this show is how much space you've given each tree. I think giving most of the trees their own 6 foot or 8 foot space has been really good.
That's something I was able to accommodate for, because we didn't get as many trees as I would hope, but I had just enough space marked out for each one. So
in your opinion,
like both of you guys, like 6 foot for display,
should be 7 inches. I know it's the size of a tatami mat, or usually 72 inches roughly, like that.
What is that?
That
is about perfect.
That's around that area.
Some shows,
it's a little bit tighter. It's a little bit harder to pull that off. Also, table height.
We're not at official table height here.
These are like folding tables. They're quite low. It's usually higher, if I'm correct.
I like
it too.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think they're at an adequate height. I think the height's great.
You think that's good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think that's good? Yeah, because I've heard somewhere down the line that having higher tables too.
It's.
You know,
this is where we're at with it.
This is where we're at with it. So
next tree.
All right.
So cool. I wanted to talk about
this. So I wanted to talk about this one because Mike, know a little bit about this.
I just wanted to get some.
So, I just wanted to get some. Context so here's some context on this one. This is a water elm. I have performed most of the wiring work. Laurent Darrow started the Cosmin design.
My friend Chase.
And then my friend Chase is around here somewhere. He's one of our bonsai buds, of course. But he made the floating island display here. It's very windy today, so it's a little
scary
watching it move around. But I think it's dynamic enough for that.
But yeah.
Mike, you actually touched some of the deadwood features.
The opening and of the scarification.
I'll be a little more hands off on this.
Because I want to hear what you guys have
Carmen,
to say.
Do you want
I'm just interested for a few minutes.
So I think this is a really fun display. I like that
it went full cosmic
with the display as well, because I mean it's a very non-traditional style. It kind of has
idea that goes with it
of like spaceships and robots and all that dystopia and all that stuff. And I feel like it's in here in the display. I want the tree to be a little bit older. There's a few straight parts in the trunk that I wish there was a little bit more movement in.
But I think it's
on its way to being,
you know, it's just a young,
it's just a young tree. So I think give it 10 more years. And it's going to be really cool.
I
really do love the spaceship crashing into it. I think that's kind of a fun way to bring that element to it. So it's non-traditional, but
I like it too. I think Carmen nailed it with especially with cosmic design. You really want the tree will be mature when these branches are this thickness. And you have the scarification that's pulling away from the trunk, and you really have that. It'll be the more mature version of the tree, but where you're at, it's fine to have shown it. You know, like this, I think it looks great. My own critique: I'm going to go a little in the opposite of what Carmen said, and I almost would love to see this here as the accent, and I would almost get rid of the stone completely, because I feel the stone really is too traditional to go with everything else you have on the display. And I almost feel like there is still a nuance to the three-point display where the spaceship is cool in the tree, but I almost think you could preserve some of the traditional three-point display by using that as an accent and still convey that, you know what I'm saying?
Maybe get another water elm and a smaller version. And have
something like that. Yeah, off to the side rack might be cool. But it's very Nick Lenz like. Nick Lenz did stuff like that, and that's awesome.
Figures and
so it's very cool.
One comment about the Shakusa Suiseki stone here
is that on
hand, and it had some elements in it that are similar to floating islands.
It's just there.
I think it was Julian was walking around earlier with looking at this tree, and he was like, it needs a ground
that's
element.
I would have found something from your Tyranid. You had that little monster.
We'll see how it goes. This is its debut, so we'll see how it goes. It's been getting some questionable looks.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's going to.
That's the point.
What's up? The next challenge is to make the stand alive.
That's cool.
Here's a comment on that really quick. I know I'm counterpoint.
It's fine.
In fairness, I told Chase to really go in there and do his
Warhammer
thing. This is very common.
Okay.
To have the mosses that are artificial. It's true to the form, but I get that, though. I get that approach.
And dry ice.
Oh, yeah.
Come out of the hole.
It was that big smoky look.
Oh, that's a great idea. Coming out the thrusters.
Let's get it traditional. So I wanted to move to this display because I feel like it's something a little bit more fun for Mike to look at, too. I feel like you've worked on a few of these trees. But anyway, as far as that goes, we're not so worried about the work that's been done. I just want to talk about how this is put together. Cause Mike, this is your strong point here. Do you feel like the artist here has executed this display?
I think so. Yeah. Done a good job. There's a few things that I personally So there's a few things. It is a good display. You know, I have worked on some of these trees. I know the artist. She's a very good artist, very skilled. There are some things that I might change a little bit. I think the most fundamental thing, which is very traditional, it doesn't realistically matter for the look, But the black pine sitting at the in a lower position is usually seen as we wouldn't use this black pine for a top tree, but we would use a stronger pine for the top tree, and we wouldn't have a pine sitting lower than the top tree.
And that's so very, very traditional.
It's very traditional. And the reason is the respect element of paying the respect to the black pine as the patriarch of bonsai. So it is like the king. You know, it's what was originally studied. It's the longest studied tree. And so it gets the high ground. Now, if you don't have a black pine, then you start looking for trees of similar significance. Mm. So a tree in your area that holds a similar kind of reverence.
Yep.
You know, so bald cypress for your area, but maybe buttonwood for my area, but it's something held to a very high reverence. Where this tree would come into play is probably as an assistant. So as an assistant during like winter display, something like that might be really, really good. And I'd actually move the juniper somewhere else into the display. So
That's why I wanted to see what you thought, because I could tell walking up to it that is not typical, you know, and is the argument, could it be made that it should be a formal, informal, strong
pose? And that's a misnomer too, is that it shouldn't necessarily be, it doesn't have to be a formal upright. It has to be a more formal tree. So it doesn't have to be just a straight up and down post. And that's actually avoided most of the time. It's usually an informal upright leaning one or of two directions, but slightly. And it's a very subtle move in either direction. And so it acts as like the point to everything, you know, but it does add the first directionality to the design.
Yeah.
So like if the pine is leaning slightly this way, then obviously your assistant's going to need to go to that side. And so it's going to set the direction for everything else.
Mm-hmm. Does it feel like this is part of it, or does this feel like a separate display?
No, it definitely does feel like part of it. I mean, because this is the space you're given. And when you think about traditional Japanese displays, it makes a lot of sense when you think of the fact that you are given these limitations pretty standardized. And so your job, if you're growing small trees, is to fill this visual space to the best of your ability. So if I'm putting a big tree here, obviously I don't need as much to fill in that space. But if I'm using small trees, well, now I need to start accumulating more and more material until I fill a pleasing amount of that visual space. So that's really what it's about, is trying to fill in those areas. So cabinet sizes, people always ask, why are Shohin maxed out at 8 inches? Because you can't make this cabinet infinitely big and fit it on this table.
Yeah.
So you will max out at a certain size. And so that size is going to be about here. And you need to have 3 to 4 inches of negative space around every tree.
Yeah.
So if you can't have that, then the tree's too tall. And so everything boils down to display culture and why certain designs. In Shohin design, you won't even typically see 99% of the trees you'll see are going to be semi-cascade or informal, because they're the easiest ones to play along with others. It's display culture. So So that's what I know about that. So it's a nice display. I like the variance of pots, textures, things that I'm seeing. It's a lot to look at. I would like to see more refinement on the trees. The one that's furthest along, I'd say the juniper's looking pretty good and the elm is looking pretty good, but I would refine the rest a little further. And it could be a really, really nice Shohin display. I mean, it is a nice Shohin display, but it could be further refined.
Cool. Any thoughts, yeah. Carmen?
Yeah, I agree with everything Mike said. I think the one other thing that I would like to see is the ficus and the accent separated on maybe their own jitas each, just to create a little bit more space. It feels a little bit crowded. I want a little bit more negative space between the two. But I mean, that's a very minor thing.
Yeah, that's why my question was, is it felt like it was separate because of the way that is.
Because of that.
Yeah, that's what I was kind
of
feeling.
Variation of the pots is nice. The trees can only get more refined. So I think it's a very nice display, and I'm excited to see how it continues to mature over time.
Cool. All right, let's turn around. Let's swap sides. I want to talk about this Brazilian over here. So, what's best for you right here? Yep. So it looks like someone did their homework and did a really good 3-point here. So wanted to go through, because we just did the Shohin box, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of things to be talked about with the way that the 3-point set up as well. And I just wanted to make sure that we kind of cover every point here. So, you know, height of the stand, placement of the scroll, size of the shikusa in comparison to the tree, So I, you know, from my standpoint, I feel like there's a lot of elements. Like we have the stand is really interesting. It's really cool. And then having the Jita also being kind of an organic element as well. Does that feel a little clashing, or is how's that feel to you guys?
No, I don't necessarily mind it so much. It's fine.
You think it's okay?
Yeah, I'd say spacing's a little tight on some of it for me, and I'd say the scroll's a little high.
Okay.
I would say that the stand feels a tad high as well. The height of the stand feels high of the main tree. But overall, like, it's a pretty good three-point display. You should almost feel like that bird is connected to the design in a way. Like, it should really be, and the lower it goes, if you lowered it down a little bit, I think you'd have a little bit more connection to that environment. So other than that, the biggest critique, I think, is just spacing a little bit. If we lowered the height on the main tree and brought the scroll down slightly, I'd be very, very, very happy. Mm. The accent's fantastic. Might be a little large for the tree, but it's fantastically constructed. I mean, that's a great accent.
So. Yeah. And one of the things that I like looking at when I see three-point displays is that is if every element matches and makes a suggestion of where it is located in some type of environment. So I think this is still relevant to the range. So, and then the bird, does that feel like that matches
I would say they're different environments. I would say one is either plains or like lush jungles and things like that. So they grow on the plains of Mexico. And, so they're not, you know, I'm seeing more like a swampy kind of feel and theme from, or a marshy theme from the bird. And they're definitely not known as a marshy plant per se.
Mm.
So it's not that it's the end of the world, but definitely if you're really trying to tie in that theme of environment, you know, having accurate locality is really important. You know, you don't want to show like a pine tree forest and have a buttonwood. You know, you don't want to show like a pine scroll with a pine branch or something like that and then have a buttonwood.
Yeah.
You would want something that's reflects the locality a little bit more.
Thoughts,
I would think.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything that Mike said.
that's basically, I mean, it tends to be wordy and then you're like, yep, I agree.
Yep. I think this is, just to speak a little bit about the tree itself, I think it's a really lovely tree. I think it's very well proportioned within itself. I'd like to see a little bit more twigging and refinement further out on, you know, in the branches, but the silhouette is lovely. The leaves are very small. You can still see the trunk. There's some nice movement. The pot is beautiful.
I was going to say, yeah.
I love that pot. Mm-hmm. This is like one of the nicer things, or not nicer, but one of the nice things about dropicals is you can be a little bit more
showy.
Fun. Boisterous. Yeah.
Boisterous is a good word for it.
Flamboyant.
I think it's one of my favorite pots in the show, too. It's a very beautiful pot.
It's very reminiscent of it. That, I feel, matches the swampy theme. Like, because it almost looks like a little bit of water, a little bit of movement in the pot's glaze. There's some cool color. So I love, but I do think the stand is maybe a little bit tall. Maybe a shorter, wider stand would be better.
Yep.
And the Kusumo is a little bit too tall for this display. And I'd like to see maybe a little more color variation between the pot that the Kusumo is in and the Jita. They're a little bit similar. And then they're different from this, which is what you need, but then they're a little too similar to each other. So it's beautiful. Like, it's beautiful. I love the Kusumo. And I love every element of the display, but I think it could be improved by, you know, some of the things that Mike said.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. All right. You guys want to move to the middle here and see? I want you guys to go in the middle here, and I want to see which tree in that middle section sparks an interest, and we go straight to it.
All right.
I think that would be kind of nice. Yep.
Uh-oh.
Yep. We're going to move to the middle section here, guys. Standing back, which one draws your eye first?
The juniper or whatever that
is. That's right. Oh, yeah. Let's go here. Okay.
That was just the biggest thing.
Y'all,
I think
you guys
saw
around here.
It's Hollywood juniper. Yeah.
No,
Eastern red cedar.
Eastern red cedar.
Nice.
So I'm happy to see that this one was kind of spotted out. So I actually asked the gentleman who has this tree to show it
Oh, so yep. sorry. So
to
sorry.
Show it at our Say Bonsai show, because there's a couple of things going on here that I really enjoy. Eastern red cedar is one of the only conifers in our range, in our native range in Louisiana, this southeast loop range, that works.
Mm-hmm.
And that can actually make a really nice conifer. Because other options we got are like loblolly pine,
right?
Maybe some slash pine, Virginiana pines. But when it comes to needle, like juniper stuff, like, I mean, not needle, but scale foliage junipers, it's kind of tough.
Mm-hmm.
And eastern red pine is kind of like that old man, kind of like cemetery tree here,
right.
normally. So there, it's in rare form to see strong roots, interesting gin, and some kind of padding on a yeah, cedar like this.
For sure.
So I thought it was a really neat tree. I'm glad that that Mr. Joey had brought it along for display. Now, as far as his display elements, like his stand and the lack of shikusa, you know, that can kind of be looked past right now,
mm-hmm.
Because the stand itself is, you know, it's got its own charm. I do enjoy the very ready-made version or feel of that stand, though.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I want to see what y'all's thoughts are as far as the way that it was created or how it's going. So good. Yeah, this is a fun tree.
Yeah, it looks really cool. Carmen, what are your thoughts?
You want to know what I think?
Yeah, go ahead.
You cut that branch off.
Yeah,
which
agree
one
with that?
The one on the this side?
I think it'll be more dynamic.
Make gin.
As a leading yeah tree and create a secondary trunk in here. This is probably one of the healthiest, biggest, like, eastern red cedars I've seen as bonsai. Like, this is a really good material.
Yeah.
And I think that it could become even better with a couple adjustments just to make it a more dynamic presentation. So super healthy. Let's do it right now. No.
Yeah. Sorry, Alan.
You're good.
But I agree with that. I think it's a little too symmetrical right now.
I've actually seen the gin up in there.
I think if you gin that off to the left and made a nice piece of deadwood out of it, that's really a lot of interest you're creating. I think it's too wide currently as well. So I think that fixes that problem. So yeah,
get rid of the triangle.
It does. It does. So you'll really, really add a lot of character to the tree just by getting rid of that one branch. The other thing that I don't know that I would have, and this isn't wrong, this isn't like a negative, it's not a right or a wrong, it's just how I don't know that I would have designed it this way, is I tend to not develop conifers with a deciduous branch structure.
It's
got a very much up and out branch structure.
Kind of like almost like a flame shape.
But some artists do that. I mean, I've seen it. It's common. You know, it's not uncommon. It's just probably not how I would have approached the material. I would have maybe probably swept some more stuff and kind of brought things more down, drop branches, things like that. But that's the beauty of it, is it can be styled in a number of different ways and enjoyed all of those ways. So
a lot of the red cedars up north are very upright, Bucky, straight trunk trees. And so that part doesn't bother me so much. And again, like you said, it's not wrong. I probably would, were we to gin that, I probably would then maybe increase the movement to the right with maybe a little bit more sweeping. But I think kind of up and out is kind of a fun way to approach a conifer, because sure, you don't see it too much. And this would be a good, since it's so far along in its current style, that'd be a really good way to keep going with it.
Absolutely. Oh, I definitely wouldn't go back now.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I agree with Carmen. It is definitely interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, did you knock my shrimp over?
No.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, it was off center. No. I liked how you had it before.
We're gonna bypass Mike's display.
Oh man, I wanted to go as hard as possible.
Because let's talk about a bald cypress.
Okay, this is kind of cool.
Yep, I think that's what we're here for.
Yeah,
right? Yeah. I like the still. Yep. So this is what Say Bonsai is about this year: our bald cypresses. So we invited a lot of people to bring in bald cypress displays. This one came from Rusty Harris,
yeah,
North Carolina. So they also have a really, really strong bald cypress bonsai presence there. Lots of opinions on how flat top should be created. So this is going to be fun because you understand flat tops a certain way. I do. Carmen, you're kind of in this in between, right? But when it comes to the overall presentation of the tree, this one kind of feels kind of like when you got that tree from Nate and you had that primordial kind of
right
feel to it. It's got that yeah lumpy dinosaur, you know, inverse. He's not shy about his inverse.
Yeah.
Up the trunk there, big, thick branches and stuff. And even the way it's kind of crudely shown, I'm going to say it's a little bit I don't want to sound harsh, but it's crudely shown on this piece of live wood right
here. Sure.
I'm a little indifferent about the sparkly top dressing. Yeah. I don't know how or what that relates to. Maybe it's something that, you know, the artist would have an opinion on why they did that.
Mm-hmm.
But is it?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe they're suggesting that this is water. That could be it. I don't know if the material was effective enough to do that. You know, I probably would have just enjoyed it mossed over completely. So, but yeah, go ahead, Mike. What do you think?
So it's an old tree, and so that's really important. In bonsai, we want to show trees that are old. They're the most valuable, most revered. But that doesn't mean that old trees get off scot-free all the time. It doesn't mean that certain corrections can't be made. I would say you're kind of, other than starting the tree over, I don't know how you deal with that reverse taper. You can maybe carve something into it, but I would say you're locked in. I would deal more with the branching. The branching is where I'd focus most of my attention. Is unfortunately, a lot of this stuff feels pretty far gone as far as building good ramification. This is probably a branch I would take in to about here. And this one I might take into here and rebuild.
Mm.
Just my own personal taste, just because we are getting a lot of this, not even just reverse taper, but wounds that have been cut in so many different directions and so close together that now we've created not just a circular wound, but a wound that kind of goes around the branch.
Yeah.
And that's very difficult to heal, very difficult to bring that branch back from that point. So me personally, that would bother me and I'd want to fix that. You do have already buds in the base of the branch, a lot of buds. They will back bud just fine. The rest of the structure, I don't really have a huge issue with. It's mostly these two branches that I would say I would adjust. You know, maybe this one, but...
I could probably do without the one you just pointed at.
This one?
Yeah.
I could probably do without that as well. Mm. It's pretty straight.
Just completely take it off.
Or even just, you could, if you're unsure, you could always stub and bring the bud
you
out.
You don't think you would take it off?
I think either.
Why is that?
Otherwise, what else do you have?
No, but look, you could always, and I'm not saying you even use these because everything's up and out, but hypothetically, if you cut to here, you're going to get more buds off of there. And I'm not saying you even do it. Yeah.
And it's that's something.
I just wouldn't take it off and not grow it.
You don't think so? No. Yeah. It just kind of goes, I would like to see more emphasis on this lofty. You got this really nice peaky branch back here. And if we're going to go with these big wound looking branches, and Mike, you're suggesting cutting back and rebuilding a few of them. And I mean,
and you don't have to. You can work with what you have. You just live with the issues that it's going to present.
And
so
there are some styles, almost like a pinjean kind of thing, where you do have this big lumpy old branch with twigs coming straight out of that.
My argument against that is that pinjean is not quite as technical as bonsai. I will say that's I know people might be a hard.
It's a different school of thought.
It's a different school of thought. They're not looking for as extreme ramification. They're not refining trees to as deep of a level typically. You know, so pinjean is more playful. Pinjean's more about the character of the tree. Do you see a spirit in it? Do you see a giraffe? You know, it's more about being playful to shapes. And a lot of times the branching is a secondary thought on some schools of pinjean.
Yeah.
There are other schools like the Southern style and practiced in Taiwan that are very, very, very in depth, but we don't even consider that pinjean anymore. It's closer to bonsai.
Yep.
So
some closing notes on this one, being experienced and versed in bald cypress. The knees are of note on here.
I like the knees. The knees are awesome.
This is okay. So if we can get past some of the structural kind of conversation here and stuff like that, when it comes to the quality of this base, that's pretty spectacular. That's one of the better bald cypress bases I've seen probably ever.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And I can tell right here, this little knee kind of thing happening, that's new. Because whenever they usually get potted up, they get these really, really thin roots and they pop up suddenly and they make that little knee section. Some bonsai artists will raise that and encourage that more. Mr. Randy Bennett, he's done a lot of work with that too, where he sees their little tiny hairline, almost like a, he said it's like a pencil lead thin root, and all of a sudden his knee popped off of it. So I can tell that this was rebuilt, but then finding these roots that have those knees, that one's fun, that have these knees popping up, you can see there's a little bit of dieback peaking on that one.
Yeah.
But then they'll heal right over. It's part of the vascular root system. So it's possible to get them like this And I really enjoy this part of the tree.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and there's a lot of things going on up here, but I mean, this thing could be built a million different ways with that bottom there, with that that root base.
For sure.
So I like the bootlegger still a lot.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's really fun. So what's the next?
Well, I just want to real quick just comment on how cool this gourd stone is, whatever that is.
It's like a duck or a rabbit?
It's a gourd.
Is it a duck or a rabbit?
Oh. I see.
What's the animal shape?
I think I see a duck. Yeah. But
I don't know if that was intentional by the artist displaying this piece.
But it's a great, that's like a gourd. That looks just like a gourd to me.
Yep.
Like, that's awesome.
I love the rock. Did you see the interactive display?
I didn't turn it over. I didn't know if I was loud. I thought it was a trick. That feels good.
So we got two pretty good ones. Which one do y'all want to talk about for
the junipers, or which ones?
The primna or the juniper? Which one do you think?
We can do the juniper.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's look at this.
Thinking about what trees like drew us to
that. Yeah. Now what's more? That one's interesting. This one this is pretty good.
That's a nice
juniper. Yeah. Am I right, guys? We need for angle.
Oh, sorry.
Yep. So this one comes from Texas. This artist has gone with Procumans Nano, which
Pete Parker. Yeah.
Yep. It's a very understudied juniper, but then at the same time, when people do it, this is what we can do with this this variety, this garden juniper, considered to be inferior. That's why we were talking earlier in the podcast. Like, eventually, we want to start working on material like this, but then this is like everyone's first bonsai tree as well.
Right.
So, but this is there's a lot going on here. Look, you can find them because they are creepers. So it looks like he found a stock with multiple trunks.
Yeah.
Typically, people will take off all those pieces, and you would say this dominant taller piece here, that would be an excellent bonsai on its own. But the artist has chosen here to go with the other elements of this and make it more of like a, what you call it, a sinuous root kind of style here. But what's really interesting to me on this is that his flow is suggesting that way, even though we got some dropping elements, some cascading elements, because he's got a shikusa on the other side. But and you would probably kind of go back and forth with me on this, because you've seen flow on trees.
Yeah.
And I've said, what's the flow on this tree? And you're like, you say something I can't expect or wouldn't expect, but you're making that face. What?
Yeah, I just saw the flow.
That's flowing that way, yeah. No.
It's a great flow.
Yeah.
Does that deadwood feature...
No.
It's not strong enough.
Not strong enough to make it. Could it have been strong enough?
No.
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 I don't know. That's a really arousing question for me, is like, is that deadwood, could it ever have been a feature to... Is that possible in this type
of... You cut both of those off.
Right. It would have to be so dominant that you have no other choice but to view the tree and going in that direction.
It would have to be framed a little bit more.
It would have to be very dominant.
Yeah.
Like, this crown would need to be like that. This would need to be maybe non-existent. This one might need to be super tiny. And even then, you might still struggle to pull the eye that direction.
Yeah.
So it'd be hard.
Move the whole thing to the left in the pot. The accent over there.
Yeah, and you're done. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's really nicely done. It's well padded out. And
it is.
Mature foliage for a Procumbens Nana. I don't like working with them because they are like the hardest juniper.
They are. They're
like, I don't know why people start. Like, that's not a good tree. Don't start with this.
No.
So
it's very difficult.
It's hard to work with even as a professional. This probably the best Nana, one of the best Nanas I've ever seen.
It just needs a little bit of flow change.
It needs a little bit of.
Yeah,
a little bit of tidying up.
But I agree with Carmen. These are like the hardest juniper. They're just, I was talking with Seth about using them, if they use them in Japan, and he said they really don't. You know, they avoid them because they have soft deadwood, numerous other issues, reverse taper issues. So this one is phenomenal. And just a really fun tree to look at.
And I do want to talk about the display because it's really, really well done.
Yeah, the table's awesome.
The are different, but they all go together. The accent is in a pretty good proportion. It could be a little bit smaller, but it's so nice up here.
Pot's really nice.
Pot's really nice.
Stand's really nice. Yeah. It's a high-level display for sure.
Yep. All right. So what time is it right now?
12:51.
Okay. We got time for about maybe two more. We're going to walk around the other side.
All right.
Yep.
You guys want to stop?
Anybody in the crowd that wants to talk about trees? We just talked about yourself. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, and let's just kind of anything over here.
I like that tree a lot. Yeah, Flo. We could talk about this.
Yep. Let's talk about that one, and then we'll end with the big gigantic cypress at the end.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. All right. Let's get over here, guys. Okay. So, critique on Randy Bennett with his twin trunk cypress. This that appears to be connected there. It's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah. But the fronts to be right.
That's what I want.
That's actually that's... yeah. We're standing here on the side, and so
I also want it potted either more centered or way over.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering if. Like, where's the flow? The flow feels like it is that way.
No, the flow would definitely be that way.
It would be this way from this front.
From this front, yeah.
Yes, and it still is, like, from where it's being suggested, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
It does feel like it could be different, though, in my opinion, because of how strong the main tree is kind of going in that direction.
Top would have to go that
way. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the top would go that way.
This way.
I think I would like it, in my opinion. You guys are saying different, but I would like it going slightly that way, especially if I'm looking at this presented could be a front. I know, like, from the viewpoint, it's gonna be hard because we'll have the camera come around and kind of show what we're looking at in a little while here, but there was a couple of other elements here, like this is a different thing with the 3-point display here with the bird. I think it's an egret. Yeah, because there's so many different egrets.
And honestly, that scroll, the height and the way it sits in proportion to that tree,
that's
the bird sitting in the tree. That's a really good way of using that scroll.
And that's a swamp bird with a swamp tree.
Yeah.
Yep. And so is the bird supposed to point towards the tree or away from the tree?
I almost think it doesn't matter because he's continuing on to the Shitakusa and then it continues back over. I think the flow is fine that way.
Okay, cool.
That's I love I that match. That scroll pairs awesome.
Yeah.
Yep.
It reminds me, because it's a little bit hairy, it reminds me of the Little Mermaid, the Kiss the Earl song.
Yeah. I think the only thing I might like better is if this scroll was shown in winter with this, because typically when you have black and gold, that is a winter display.
It is still wintery.
Yeah. And so I almost feel like that might even be better if it was defoliated and you kind of had that next to it. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really important with 3-point displays that it's accurate to what's actually behind or in the distance or nearby. I was showing a 3-point over in at the Collinsville St. Louis show, and I had a scroll with a shrimp on it.
Yeah,
that was up, and I thought it was really fun for some flavor because I had a southeast tree.
Yeah,
and then I had another artist walk up to me and said, "Your shrimp's flying through the air."
Yeah,
so it's very, very crucial that we show mountain birds or some kind of other element that would be in the air or adjacent to this tree.
Yeah, no, you can show abstract.
Right, and then that's what somebody else told me. So there's so many contradictory to that.
You can show like a,
when you're told that your shrimp is flying or your other element is flying through the air.
Maybe it is flying.
Maybe it was a flying shrimp.
Yeah. Maybe we're actually at this show and you're throwing it because it's either a bad shrimp or you're done with the show. I don't know. So I thought that was kind of silly, but
it's interesting.
Maybe the gold is the fireflies.
Oh yeah, that'd be cool. Maybe it is summertime. Yeah, maybe it is fireflies.
I mean, it is a little bright for fireflies, but we're getting a little too picky on that.
It's pretty cool.
All right, let's go into the big giant cypress and wrap this up.
Let's check it out. Check it out. So, whoa.
Pardon us, Mr. Joey. Yeah, we're going to hear history. It's okay. Okay. So, hey, look, there's the man over there. Nate, you want to come give us some context on this really quick?
He's first off, Evan made it with the back, now the front, which I think is better the way it's landed.
Yeah.
Also, if you see the back, it's a little more uniform. Definitely not as ramified as it needs to be.
Yeah.
This was a tree collected Christmas Eve of 2020.
Yeah, okay. I got that right.
There was never a chop, so the taper has always been what it is. The initial cuts have been rolled over. I let it recover for a year. I completely cut it back. Evan and I made it into a more of a juvenile-looking deciduous.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a week later,
we've cut everything off again.
Cut everything off to a flat top style. Just because I didn't want that base. And I know it's when we talk about proportions and heights and things like that, I know it's almost unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's what we're here for, is to talk about that element of it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So
I think it needs to look old, because if I go.
I agree with you. My only critique is I think you removed a few too many branches. So I think what I would like to see is a few more branches on the design.
He's looking at me because there was a branch cut off.
Not that one necessarily, but I'm saying you need something like, I don't know what happened there, but that might be useful. That one's not great, but you do need something in that area, you know. So it's just the only thing that I would say is you have this huge pot and your design is like here. And, you know, I mean, that's not impossible. You look at some of the old John Naka trees and stuff, and you'll see these big containers and thin profiled trees. But
wrapping a horse.
This one, the base is massive. And it almost, to me, dictates, I would almost want to see some like heavy, low branching before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like before I make it all the way to that height, you know. It does feel like there's a difference in, this is just so powerful and this is so thin in comparison. Like it's, and I know it tapers up to it, so it's not that, but I just think these branches, we need like some big ones maybe here, and they need to be a little bit longer and a little bit more robust, I would say. But it's a phenomenal, I mean, the base, this is like a full-size tree. I mean, the base is off a full-size tree, so it's amazing.
Yeah.
But we definitely need to build those branches to a bigger proportion, I would say.
Certain.
Cool.
Yeah, what do you think?
Any thoughts, Carmen?
Oh, of course, thoughts.
Okay.
I'm going to be careful because it's bigger.
I know, this is what we actually built for inside the tree. It is taller than me. Mostly I agree with Mike. I don't necessarily think you need lower branches, but I just want them bigger. And I think even if you went up and out, that would be fine, but I think I need more up top,
mm-hmm.
just to balance out the bottom. So longer branches, bigger branches, but that's just an age thing. It just needs time. And so it, I don't know, 3 years, 5 years, they grow so fast. I don't know how long it'll take. Get a few more years and you'll be good.
So expand the mirror. The width of this?
Not necessarily. And that's the thing, is like, it's tricky. I will tell you, like, I wouldn't be keeping the profile this thin. I'd say you're probably the thinnest you can go is about there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, I wouldn't go wider than that either. Yeah. Because even though your pot's wider, and the old rule is you could go 2/3 the width of the pot, you have such a difference in this thickness versus this thickness here, that it's not going to be the same look. You're not going to have that same, it's going to look too wide here. Right. If you do the 2/3 thing or the third thing, then it will for the trunk. So I would say you need to keep it thinner than the pot, but a little wider.
Maybe 6 inches.
That's not a bad idea. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, that was one of the initial arguments that I've heard some people say is if it was taller, which is insane because it's already pretty tall.
Evan, then you gotta get the black tall.
60 inch
tall.
No way, it's as tall as it is. That's hilarious. It's a hippopotamus tree.
Yeah, so cool. Yeah, I wanted to talk about this one real quick because that's what Louisiana is about.
Like this is real tall.
Yeah. So great base. Yeah, definitely needs maturity, but cool. So we need to move on.
Hey, we all need a little maturity, right?
We need to move on to the next part of the show here. So this was the Little Things Critique walking around. Thank you guys for tuning in. The live video of this will be available. If you're watching here, thank you for watching. And then, of course, we're going to show the pictures that are for the critique on our Instagram over at Little Things for Bonsai People on Instagram. So that will be there. This has been Evan Pardue, Carmen Leskiewicz. Yep, that's you and
Mike Lane
going through first live recording. That was not bad.
Awesome. All right, so
let's go have fun.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, everybody.